Hello. Welcome to Our Voices, Our Community, presented by Colors VA Magazine. Our Voices, Our Community focuses on community issues to include, but not limited to, social issues, political issues, and economic issues on national, state, and local fronts. Today, I have multiple voices in the room today, and I want to start with introducing our panel today, and I want to introduce Catherine Cable. How you doing, Catherine?
I'm good. A little tired.
You're a little tired? Okay. All right. Well, Catherine is a public health advocate. She also has another job that I refuse to say, so you won't have to say it.
I was trained as an immunologist.
Thank you. There you go. Thank you. I'm glad you said it, not me. And she's also co-founder of Blue Ridge Coalition Against Gun Violence. She's also co-founder of Great American Gun Melt. She's officially is banned from the NRA headquarters. And also, she's voted the scariest woman alive by Wayne LaPierre.
No. Oh,
is that true or not?
No.
That's not true?
That last part.
Is it true?
That last part is not true. The NRA headquarters part is true.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. I took it back. Well, I will have to edit the introduction next time. I thought it sounds pretty cool. We have Will Solari. How
Hello.
You doing, Will?
Good. How are you?
I am well. Will is a filmmaker and community organizer who specializes in storytelling in the arts. Occasionally dipping his toes into the government and politics, Solari has done work for everyone from Tin Cane to Roanoke Skate Park to the Roanoke Skate Park Initiative. You can frequently hear him on Radio Free Roanoke and in film festivals with obscure themes. What kind of obscure themes is that?
I mean, I somehow made a film about bikes for Ride Solutions a number of years ago, and it went international. And
went
the thing I
it?
Yeah, yeah. I knew nothing about got the most traction, so figure.
Okay. Well, he currently lives in Roanoke with two kids, two cats, and their out-of-control dog, Brutus.
That's right.
Okay, and he's living his dream of being a guest on every podcast ever. That's your ultimate dream.
It is.
Okay, well, I'm glad you glad.
I know,
you
and
joined.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that's all right.
We're
it's always part of fulfilling everyone's dream here, so we're glad about that. Jose Benuelos, how are you? Did I get that name right?
Yes, you did.
Yeah,
thank
okay.
you.
See, that's where I'm at. Because I couldn't say Catherine's job, so I had to make sure I get your last name correct.
Yeah.
Well, Jose is associate professor of Spanish at Roanoke College, co-director of Modern Languages, poetry recital group, and co-advisor of HOLA to spread diversity and inclusion. What's HOLA?
That's a Hispanic organization of achievement in leadership.
Okay. You are also an active board member of Casa Latina.
Yes.
And a volunteer for Roanoke Immigrant Families.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay. Joining us for the first time, I have the lovely Karen Cobb. Karen is a resident of Roanoke City.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. How are you?
Good, good.
She relocated to Roanoke from Philadelphia in 1992, moved to Florida in 2001 to take care of her aging parents. She was followed by her son Kyle and her stepson Brandon. Karen's mother passed in 2004, and 4 years later, her son was brutally murdered along with her friend Cabretti.
With his friend Cabretti.
Cabretti.
Yes.
During a home invasion. I'm sorry about that. After the loss of her father in 2012, she moved back to Roanoke in 2014, where she met the love of her life, James Crawley. Aww.
That's so sweet.
That's all right. I'm not going to tell you how I met my wife.
Okay.
I have tears flowing all over the place here. After seeing several of her friends murdered in Roanoke last year, Karen decided to use her voice to address the epidemic gun violence. Professionally, she works for a Fortune 100 company in human resources. Karen, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me. Glad to be here.
Okay. Last but not least, we have Byron Hamler.
Hello, hello.
Hey, Byron, how are you?
Doing well. Tired, but I'm doing well.
Oh, God, you got that low voice there. You got that Luther voice there. Okay, well, I'm going to keep moving. Byron is a native of Roanoke, and he's a third generation of Hamlin Curtis Funeral Home. He's Virginia director of the Tutoring Formula. What exactly is that?
It's a tutoring company. We tutor kids in math and science, and we tutor basically in Maryland, and we started one in Virginia, so we're doing it in the Richmond area and it's outward area.
Oh, cool. That's cool. You're owner of Hamlin Organization, which is a holding company who just recently founded the Commonwealth Notary. Byron is married to Kara Hamler, and they have a 2-year-old daughter named Lauren. He loves the Roanoke Valley, and Byron's goal is to make this the best place to live. So, I think I haven't introduced myself. I'm Robert Jeffrey, and I'm actually will be moderating Our Voices, Our Community. I grew up here in Roanoke, went to Hampton University, left, went to Seattle for about 23 years, and decided to come back to my hometown, which I extremely happy that I am back, and I came back because of the love of my life. So Karen, there is a reason why I'm back, because of love. And, you know, love is crazy.
Love is wonderful.
Love is wonderful. Okay, I should say that because my wife does listen to this show, so I shouldn't say that. But I am happy to be back here, and I'm glad for you guys to be here today. So let's get started here. We're gonna transition this conversation into the recent comments that our the recent actions after the comments have been made by our police chief. And for people who don't know what's going on February 19th, there was a city council meeting, and at that time, Police Chief Tim Jones presented crime statistics at the February 19th council meeting. And the issue, he reported the issues of rapes, 32 reported rapes last year, 10 more than 22 in 2017, and in 2015, the mark of 29. His comment that I guess raised a lot of issues were that all too many young people put themselves at risk when alcohol and social behavior goes bad. And that's what we are seeing the greatest of our investigations, Jones said. So since then, there's been a public outcry on this subject. Many people are asking for him to step down from his position. Some people can consider it a public safety issue. And so I guess we're going to start in this roundtable discussion about your thoughts about the police chief's actions. Now, I do have to say at this time, he has not made a comment since then. So
my understanding is he's out of town.
Oh, he's out of town.
Gone and not. I don't know. Okay. What's going on there?
Well, full disclosure.
A lot of self-reflecting.
Yeah. Well, full disclosure, Catherine, you've been kind of in the forefront of this. And so I'm gonna let you start this conversation on this subject about his statement. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I'm going to be brief because I have been causing the trouble, and so everybody else can comment on it. So, you know, I was one of the people at City Council this past week calling for his resignation, and I wasn't saying it was only over the comments. And, you know, the group there was not saying it was only over the most recent comments, although those are very concerning. And I think it's also very concerning that we also heard in that same meeting, that same report, that really the Commonwealth's attorney and the police together don't consider a rape to be a quote unquote real rape if you have previously had any consensual sexual contact, even kissing or any sort of like anything with that person, or any kind of consensual relationship with that person, that then later they basically consider it unprosecutable or like they can't resolve it or charge it if you've had any sort of relationship with that person that was consensual. And that's really disturbing. So there was that. And then, we tied it into previous instances where we felt like he had gotten feedback about, okay, you know, the opioid epidemic, that we need to be doing something about that. We need to be having a certain approach to that was scientifically and public health based. And he said no. and just no amount of his, no amount of experts could change his mind on that. And it was pretty obvious. And we read some quotes from that incident. And then even Beth Macy tried to change his mind. It didn't work. So, and then there's also the gun issue where he, you know, he's been somewhat responsive, but he kind of continues to make the same sort of statements. I know Karen's got a lot more to say on this than I do, but you know, she's tried to talk to him about it. I know, and I've tried to talk to him about it. And you know, when I first reached out to him, he said the American Academy of Pediatrics was a biased source that I was, you know, citing. I mean, that just is ridiculous. I was talking about, you know, children not being injured and the best way to prevent that. So, anyways, that's the situation. So we kind of said it was a pattern and that he wasn't listening and that he was I called him a menace to public safety.
Well, yeah, yeah, that's pretty harsh for the police chief to be a menace, don't you think?
I know, but current situation. So I'm going to let everybody else comment on my troublemakers. Okay. I also might have called him Chief Roadblock.
Okay. Karen, you want to tie in this?
Sure. Let me first just say that, you know, I have been sexually assaulted before as a teenager. And it was probably one of the scariest things that I've ever been through in my life. And for the chief to come out to say that women are basically, to paraphrase, that they're responsible for the way they dress and the consumption of alcohol is wrong, because you're placing the blame in the wrong place. And Catherine, I totally agree with you. You know, it's a culture. It's a culture thing where men feel that they're okay to take advantage of women. And I think even to the point where they look for women who have been maybe drinking, knowing that they can try to take advantage of them. So for him, number one, to make that statement and just talk about the women and not include the behavior of men makes it seem what he's saying very, very one-sided. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's a culture shift. And when you have the chief of police making this statement, it makes the women in this city wonder, you know, can we really trust this person? If something happens to me, would I feel comfortable going to him or someone on his staff and entrusting my issues with him? Especially with the statement that you made about the Commonwealth's attorney not really moving forward with a full prosecution if someone, a woman, had prior consensual sex with someone and then was raped. We have women who are married who are being raped by their husbands. So how do you follow up with that? I mean, rape is rape. If a woman says no, that means no, period. All that other circumstantial stuff doesn't matter. If a woman is body is being violated, then it's rape, period.
I think you're absolutely right, Karen. I think those kind of statements demonstrate the lack of understanding of how sexual assault works, how any kind of sexual intimidation, harassment, or just the perfect victim rape even works. You know, and it's thrown in our faces, I think, every day in such a frustrating way, especially for people like you as a survivor, especially if you're any survivors out there. When you have people going, well, you know, if they have been engaged in any kind of way with them physically before, then it can't really be rape. I mean, and that's the same kind of nonsense and lack of understanding that someone like our president has right now, who says, oh, there's many sides to white nationalism, you know, many sides to this. Or for a fact, Trump was taken to court by his ex-wife, and it was deemed that you couldn't rape your wife. And based on her accusations. Mm. And so that kind of culture, I think there's no place for it anymore. There's no place for this sort of, and again, kind of good old boys club about, well, you know, if girls just didn't wear provocative clothing and do the things that we can do, then men wouldn't be forced to rape them. And I think that until they understand why that kind of thinking is problematic, until people understand why having people, especially people in leadership, with those kind of thoughts, whether they're just kind of a subconscious bias or an outright one, is problematic.
So do you
think no one's going to feel safe?
Do you think do you think that the police chief is a good fit for our city? I mean, I think we talked about this last time about this. Well, let's say Roanoke is supposed to be a progressive city, or at least trying to become a progressive city. Is you know, his background and what his current views and statements are, is he a good fit for the city? I'm gonna pass it over to Jose real quick. No,
I don't think so that he's a good fit for the city. Just to chime in a little bit more in the comments that have been made, his comment kind of justifies, you know, rape. Okay, that because women tend to dress or tend to behave in a particular way, you know, in a very sexual way, then they are allowing themselves or putting themselves at a risk. And that type of mentality, this mentality that accuses women of instigating rape, you know, upon themselves, or men kind of controlling themselves, I think this lack of a sensitivity for the feelings, for the emotions, you know, for what the rape victim is going through. I think an individual, or like, for example, a police chief that cannot think about what the suffering of this victim is going through and accusing that victim, it would not be a good fit, you know, for mm-hmm. the position that we're looking for. Another thing that I'm looking at in regards to his comment is the objectification of women here. No. The sexual symbol, the sexual object here. So if she wants to feel free, if she wants to dress however she wants to dress, she wants to behave however she wants to behave, that cannot be grounds of inviting the male, you know, into violating the private space, you know, which is the body, okay? That cannot be. So we have to find a way to deconstruct this male mentality that they can possess anything they want, okay? And if they are probably, if they are like in a party, for example, and there's drinking going on, she has all the right to drink as he has all the right to drink as well, okay? So we have to kind of change or deconstruct this male mentality, you know, that they can possess anything they want.
Well, and again, the one thing I will say in the chief's defense is that he is part of the enforcement arm, again, of the Commonwealth's attorney. And if the Commonwealth's attorney isn't demanding more out of him and isn't setting those kind of guidelines that don't enforce misogyny or that go against this kind of entitlement, then he's just doing his job. And that's a problem, too. I mean, no one is holding him accountable, and the people that should be are just as bad.
Okay. Anyone else want to chime in?
I just have one more thing.
Sure.
I just have one more thing that I would like to say. I worked as a campus police officer for 8 years on a college campus and have seen many instances where this culture is ignored by the administration of the colleges, where women report things and it gets taken care of internally. Many times it's not even reported to the police externally. The college will take care of it through their own system of their own internal judicial type of system where they address the case with the staff or the higher level staff at the colleges. And many times a lot of the men or the students, male students, get off the hook or have very light consequences for the things that happen. So I would imagine that they get out of college and they feel that if I can get away with it here, why can't I get away with it out in regular life? So not only do we have to address the culture as a whole, but we have to start again teaching our young men, you know, when they're younger, letting them know this is unacceptable. But we have to have accountability in our school systems and our higher education systems as well, where there's the culture of partying and alcohol and this sweeping under the rug of a lot of these instances. I've seen it too many times.
Can I speak to the school system part of that, though? Because my partner works at the Women's Center at Virginia Tech, and one of their constant frustrations and one of the reasons that they do handle a lot of these things internally is because of the same reason we're talking about with here in Roanoke. And it's even worse that the Commonwealth's attorney in Blacksburg is a woman. but she will not persecute cases of rape or sexual assault if it's kind of questionable, if they don't think it's, again, there's a perfect victim, or they can prove that, you know, this person was waiting in the bushes and put videos on YouTube saying they were going to do this thing. Like, it has to be this perfect case for them to even look at it. And so lots of times the school getting involved and trying to be a court, as it were, to those cases, is the only option they have because of the lack of helpfulness by the Commonwealth's attorney in Blacksburg.
To that I say we need reform all over the place then.
Okay. Byron, you want to chime in?
And I'm just going to comment on his comment. It was very ignorant. I think what he meant to say and what he did say was not the same thing. So I have a daughter, and every woman in here is somebody's daughter. So for him to say that the woman needs to, you know, about drinking and all of those things, no. I think he probably meant to say that women needs to try to protect themselves more, have more somebody around them at all times, you know, go in a group. But nobody should leave a woman alone, especially with somebody that's, you know, a little speck, kind of on the question. But by me having a daughter, I just don't know what I would do. And so making those comments, that's very unnecessary for him to be our chief of police. So,
well, Catherine, you and a group of 10 women decided at the last council meeting to make comments regarding.
Yeah.
Chief Jones, and of course, I guess we can't confirm nor deny that he was out of town, but the women did show up, and you guys were very vocal in your displeasure of his comments, and also did ask for him to resign. I mean,
we did, yeah,
you know. Yeah. So, are you guys going to continue to do more protest? Or
I think that we're reaching out to folks and gathering, you know, sort of folks that care about these three issues, because it's not just one issue. You know, we documented this, not just the one thing. It's, you know, other documented things that, you know, we have. I mean, this is all information that he's put out there in writing. I mean, this is not, you know, I do think that the city council needs to look into it and confirm these three instances that we put before them, and make sure that they're, you know, one thing Karen mentioned was that, you know, this needs to be investigated, right? So there needs to be a process, and it needs to be investigated, and we fully support that. You know, we can't just make some accusations and the council just be like, oh, okay, tomorrow we vote, you know, Chief Jones resigned. No, that's not how things work. You know, you have to have a real, they have to really look at it, and they have to see what's going on. But, you know, we do expect some sort of investigation, and, you know, we're pulling folks together to notice these specific instances. So.
Okay. All right.
One thing to that effect also, I think people in your position, Catherine, often get a bad rap for, you know, saying, oh, you're so PC that no one could do anything now, and that, you know, if we just started doing this about everyone, then, you know, nobody'd be able to do anything. And, you know, and sort of in line with sort of the comment we got earlier, and I don't think the idea for calling for people to resign or kind of backlash to things is entirely reactionary. But I think it is, again, it's like the birthing pangs of Roanoke. We're demanding better of the people who serve us and represent us. It's wanting to feel safer. It's wanting to have more qualified people, and it's wanting to have a better community. It's not about just punishing someone. It's not about, you know, acknowledging that someone like Chief Jones could still be a person and make a bad mistake. Same with the governor, whoever else. But it's saying that, you know, as a community and as people who want to feel safe in this community, we need to take greater strides to find the right people for those positions.
Okay.
And it's just, yeah.
Let's wrap up, Jose.
And it's just concerning, you know, for people in leadership positions, you know, like the chief, you know, that they have to go through this trial and error, and then you have to re-educate them once again, you know,
exactly.
On sensitive issues. No, I think leaders that actually come into this type of positions, that you have this awareness already and this a consciousness, without actually making a mistake and then suddenly, well, I'm going to go through some training process, you know, or some sort of workshops.
Oh, yeah.
Kathy, you have a final thought on this subject?
Well, no, I think Jose is right on. We just need to, you know, people have been working with him. People have been trying to educate him. And it's the failure for him to catch up to speed that is the real problem here. You know, the needle exchange issue has been going on for a while. People tried hard to educate him on that, and he didn't listen. That was his choice.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to continue to follow. Hopefully, the police chief will, if he comes back, he'll be able to make a comment on this. I think it's important that...
Can we invite him to...
Well, I don't think he'll come to this podcast. but I do think it's important that, you know, this is an important issue. And whether he made a mistake or not, he needs to correct, make a comment, not from his spokesperson. He needs to, this is a, it's a serious issue, and he needs to be take care of that. Being a leader, you're going to have to address those issues, and you should do it up front. So when he comes back, or if he comes back, or on whatever vacation he is, we'll look forward to that. So we're going to move forward to our next subject, and it's about gun control. Of 25 years ago, after the landmark Brady Law, the House just passed Bill 8, which is a bipartisan bill to require background checks on all guns. The bill now goes to the Republican-controlled Senate, where it has a much tougher road ahead. However, President Trump has already mentioned that he is going to veto it. Also along that line, speaking of President Trump, Trump just signed a bill reversing President Obama's rule to ban gun purchases by the mentally ill. It seemed like we're taking one step forward and two steps back. Your thoughts on guns, and I know we've talked recently about the recent violence that's been going on the past couple weeks. So I'm gonna lean over to you, Karen, because you kind of one of our residents experts around in gun control.
All right, so let me just preface what I'm about to say that, you know, I don't know a lot of the legalese. I try my best to keep up with legislation. I think it's important. I mean, we do have a subject matter expert in the room, Catherine, who is definitely on top of all of the legislation that's going on regarding this particular bill, H.R. 8. And, you know, I think the key word for me here is progress. This is the first time that we've gotten a bill like this passed. And even though it'll probably be voted down by the Republican-controlled Senate, 2020's coming. And, you know, we're going to have a Democratic president. We are going to have a Democratic president and a Democratic-controlled House and Senate. And this is when I expect that the bills that we're trying to get through now will be pushed through. And this is so important. You know, this universal background check piece, there's a lot of pushback by the likes of the people who belong to the NRA. You know, they're scared of losing power and control, and that's what all of this is about. It's about power and control. They have a fear that people are going to take away their guns. You know, we're not trying to take away their guns. We just want to have some decent background checks into place to make sure that the people who are buying these guns or purchasing them from one person to another are able, number one, fit to have a gun, and number two, so we can have some more data to start tracking, you know, where are these guns coming from. You know, one of the things that I always wonder in when I hear about the murders that are going on in Roanoke, and, you know, where are these guns coming from? And our police chief has not given us any data on that as well. And I think that once we get these universal background checks in, we get some sort of system going, we can get the data that we need to actually prove the things that we believe are going on. But because the Republican, the GOP, will not pass these bills, we're dead in the water. We can't get the data that we need. With that being said, I'm going to go ahead and that's my piece. Pass it on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can't give data on something on it if you're not allowed to collect data. And that's, you know, that's just the tip of that iceberg.
Oh, yeah. So here's my theory. My theory is that the big gun industry saw what happened to big tobacco, and they said, oh, no, 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 no science, no tracking, no nothing. Because if they figure out, you know, if they can follow the data, we're in trouble. And so they just basically outlawed data. I think that's the bottom line. They outlawed data and they outlawed science on this because they knew that it was not in their favor.
And I feel like I'm beat a dead horse every time I put my mouth up to this microphone.
William, we need to keep beating it, William.
But it is a perpetual demonstration of the problems with money in politics and people creating legislation and laws that work against us and actually cause us harm, even if we're talking about the people who are allowed. Say, just take the mental health aspect of it. The people who are now who have mental health issues that are allowed to buy guns, even if they never put another person in harm, they're putting themselves in harm.
That's the biggest.
And nobody cares. The politicians who are like, no, it's fine, it's good.
Well, I think one of the reasons why Trump reversed President Obama's rule on gun purchases by the Mentalia, it was one of his campaign promises. He just did it, just like the wall. He's just saying, he made a statement, he just wanted to make sure that his base is protected by his comments, which I think is pretty asinine.
He was racist recently, and I think that might have
I don't want to call anyone racist. I'm not that kind of person to call out racist.
I just heard his lawyer. His tones.
He might have racist tones, but I'm not going. First of all, he's the president of the United States. I'm not going to call our president racist. I'm not going to do that. I mean, well, even though I mean, there's
I'll call him racist. Second that, from a minority point of view.
So that he can carry a gun himself.
All right, okay. So here we go. I see. We're winding up here. Jose, go ahead. Go ahead and add some brevity.
I just wanted to add a little bit to what we was saying in terms of the money and the lobbying, you know, and the lawmakers and the politicians. The NRA has been investing a lot of money, you know, spending a lot of money into. With the politicians several years ago. I think from 2014, from $28 million to 2016, they went to $55.6 million, you know, that they have been investing.
Rubles, Jose. Rubles. They have their documents all. They're getting sucked into the Judiciary Committee? Who did they get all their documents sucked by? They got some sort of request for documents recently. I just saw that, going around.
So then, you know, the numbers show, you know, that they've been heavily involved, you know, and investing into the politicians. And now that Brett Kavanaugh is now in the Supreme Court, they actually invested $2.1 million to get him in there because they think that if any decision gets to the Supreme Court, the fight for, you know, a conservative point of view would actually favor on their side.
Mm. Do you think, I know 2020 is important, we all know this, but do you think, you know, Karen, you just mentioned before that, you know, there's going to be a democratic change in government as far as enough to have this legislatures to actually become reality? I mean, do you actually think that's going to happen in 2020? With all these transitions?
I mean, I think the Senate is always a rough climb, but I think that Trump is super unpopular, I have to say. I mean, even in, like, we're talking about states that have been considered red for a long time, flipping. I mean, come on. I mean, down
in... But his polls say his approval rate is... it's still low, but it did go up. It did bump up a couple points.
I think that people give him approval for not having nuked us yet. I'm being serious. Like, I think that people have such low expectations that those approval numbers, like, they don't really mean they're proud of him. I think they mean, like, we're not dead yet. nuclear war yet.
And don't forget, we thought he was going to lose in 2016.
Yeah,
but
that is true.
They voted for him. And a lot of people didn't vote. So
that's true. But I'm looking towards the youth. I'm looking towards those who are coming at voting age within the next few years. And the youth of this country right now are they're fed up. They're scared to death about what's going on in their country. They're scared to death about climate change. They're scared to death about guns. They've grown grown up in an environment that really this gun violence issue has been a part of their lives since they've been growing up. And so I think that we just have to get out there in major force. And we've got to get these people to the polls. That's going to be really important in 2020, is getting people registered and finding a way to get them to the polls. And that's something where we dropped the ball. One of the places where we dropped the ball in 2016.
I think one of the things that any kind of progressive legislation has in the future. Is that, and it's not entirely different than what Representative Cummings was saying after the Cohen investigation, where he was just saying we just need to get back to normal. You know, I think you have a lot of people who would be moderate Republicans, who are conservative Republicans, who are true libertarians, who are Tea Party people, who cannot understand what is going on with the party they're supposed to be affiliated with. And I think that's going to be a huge backlash. And it's not just going to be that we have socialist Democrats now or social democracy or however, you know, whatever way you want to spin where the left's going. It's going to be that there's going to be more people who feel left out of the Republican Party and, like everyone else, want to just get back to normal. And because the way things, again, are going right now, it's not normal. It's not normal to have this many school shootings. It's not normal to have this kind of influx of guns and violence in our society. And then on top of it all, have it being perpetuated by a single figurehead. So I think, you know, if anything, we have that working for us.
I just want to comment on a couple of points here. I definitely agree with you. You know that the youth is the future of this nation. In regards to if we're going to see on 2020 a Democratic president voted in, I think it depends a lot. It will not be the only factor, but I think it depends a lot what the Democrats do with everything that is resurfacing or surfing at this point with Donald Trump. If they really get their hands on specific information, if they can actually show and prove, you know, that that all these issues that are being just talked about really have a lot of root, a lot of reality, then that's going to really open the door, because that can be a two-edged sword here. Mm-hmm. So it depends what they do with that information.
I do want to mention also that we keep saying Democrats. We do have independents who are running here, so we can assume that there's going to be a Democratic president. I'm just saying. Yeah. Howard Schultz.
That's true.
You know, Howard Schultz was possibly running.
The coffee guy.
So, you know, with your cup of coffee that you guys drink.
So addictive.
Starbucks.
Yeah, Starbucks. So
coffee for everybody.
Yeah, everybody. So I'm just throwing it out there. I don't know the reality of it. I'm just, you know me, I'm always trying to throw something in there.
That's all right.
But let's good conversation on that. So we'll see what happens with that. I really hope that we can move forward on that, and even on a local level, we can move forward on some things as well, especially on gun identification as well. So let's talk about church. Church. Let's talk about church. I mean, I like to ask, how many of you guys go to church?
Can't raise
I
your
do.
Hand in the podcast.
Okay. you guys sinners, what's wrong with you guys? Anyone goes to church?
I used to.
No, I'm just kidding.
Catholicism has a way of,
shaping and molding. Okay. Well, anyway, the United Methodist Church just had their, which is happening to be United States' third largest faith community, voted at their general conference in St. Louis to emphasize its opposition to same-sex marriage and gay clergy. This decision was, some people in the conference is cheered by conservatives that was in the global church. This isn't an international organization, so parts of Africa as well as other parts of the world was in favor of the opposition. And then there were people in the American population who were Methodist was disappointed in this decision. So gay issues in the church has always has been a subject, I know, especially in particular in the African-American community. But as one of the third largest faith community in the world, what do you think about having the gay clergy and involved in the church?
Well, so my my in-laws are, I was married in a United Methodist church, and my in-laws are United Methodist, and they went to their church, and they participated in the discussion, and their church was, you know, in favor of full inclusion in the clergy. So having everyone from, you know, all kinds of different sexual orientations, that if you wanted to serve in the clergy and you passed, you know, all the doctrinal, you know, education, you know, whatever, points you're supposed to do there, that you should be allowed. And that was their feedback. I mean, you know, my father-in-law is not a young whippersnapper, but he definitely came down on that side with, and I think their church did too. So I know they're disappointed. You know, they wanted to see things kind of move forward, and they were kind of disappointed that they didn't. I think there might be, I don't know, was the church going to schism? I don't know.
I think locally in Roanoke, there have been churches who have been stepping up and saying that,
yeah,
you know, the decision, they do not agree with that decision. I know there's a couple Methodist churches in this area who's been stepping up to the plate and saying that. However, as a whole, they're basically saying there's I don't know if there's penalties or anything like that if that are not allowing they're not allowing
oh, wow.
You know, having a gay clergy person involved in being mm-hmm. leadership of their church. I think that's an issue that is really it's an issue.
That just seems untenable. I mean,
it seems like it's old. Yeah. It's like we're going back 10, 15 years.
Well, I think Martha Park recently wrote a really great article and sort of op-ed for Imagine, this online journal, a little while back, or not a little back, just recently when this was all happening. And she talks about going into the church with her grandmother, and on the door there's a big printed sign that says, "Open hearts, open minds, open doors." Then she said, just below that, in handwritten lettering, was, you know, "Please keep doors closed," which seems like that encapsulates their entire thing. And I think Martha is absolutely right in that regard. You know, the gay marriage, whether it's in the clergy, whether it's in the church or whatever else, isn't a problem. The problem is the people in the church who have a problem with it. And I think unless you strive as a pastor, as a minister, whatever your position is in the church, to help congregation, your mm-hmm. flock, understand that, then you're doing a disservice to people. And until you do the work to kind of create that kind of shift in that paradigm, mm-hmm. People are going to stop going to church. They're not going to hear the good aspects of any religion as long as you keep people out, as long as you have a system by which you can exclude people or not accept them. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's food for thought. I don't really have a horse in this game other than that's just one of the many reasons I don't go to church anymore.
Interesting.
I was thinking, you know, about the which age group tends to dominate, you know, the population in this in any church, for example, and the shift knowing mentality here, you really have to check the foundation of a church, and the foundation of the church is the faith. And where does the faith come from? It comes from a Bible. So you always have to go to the traditional. Now, I'm not. I haven't been to a church in a very long time, so. But I've been in many churches. I mean, I was raised a Catholic. I was baptized in the Apostolic Church at the age of 33. My sister told me that it was a good age to get baptized, so I did. No, sure, okay. But if you want to be progressive, if you want to move forward, you really have to check that foundation. So, how do you reinterpret what is already written for more than 2,000 years, for example, you know, and has been has been interpreted as such, you know. So if you're able to shake that foundation or see it from multiple angles, you know, and becoming a little bit more progressive, you know, and look at people as being human beings, you know, you can't really. I don't have the scientific data, for example, no, or as to why people have these preferences, but that is something to be respected. I mean, I have friends, you know, I've spoken to a lot of people, you know, and they give me their own versions, you know, as to why they are the way they are, and we learn from each other, we understand each other. So if we are able to just jump, I mean, it's a huge barrier, it's a huge hurdle, which is the foundation of a church. The foundation is the Bible, is the faith. So how do you move away from that and become very progressive?
Karen. Yeah, and above all things, there's love, right? So one of the things that I just heard is that we're all human. And me personally, I did not grow up in the church. I did go to the church when I was a teenager with some friends. I went to the Episcopalian church, and then later I went to a Baptist church, and I took my son and I raised him in the Baptist church. But one of the things that the reason that I don't go to church today is because of all of the infighting that goes on and that I've personally seen in churches today. Because of the sometimes the traditions that you have to wear this color on that day, and You know you have to have on a dress, and people who dress well, who can afford to dress well, look down on people who can't afford to dress well. And I'm like, no, I just don't want to be a part of this, because I look at the spiritual part. I came to hear a message, and I came to improve myself. And so all that other, what I call BS, you can keep to yourself. So that's why
amen.
I do not attend church today. Now, as far as the situation with the gay clergy, I would just ask people, if you were laying on the ground and you were having a heart attack and the only person there was that gay clergy person, whether it be a man or a woman, and that person knew CPR and they could save your life, would you turn them away because that person was gay and you didn't agree with their lifestyle, or would you let them save your life? And if you turned them away, why? What are those underlying reasons that you have for turning that person away? What were you taught when you were younger that made you almost hate, and I hate to use that as a strong word, but you know, what is it that makes you hate that particular lifestyle? So we really need to be careful when we label people, and it becomes really divisive. You know, we separate people, we shun people, and we don't look at the human aspect. We need to look at people for who they are, what they do, and for the goodness, and not, you know, judge people for who they proclaim themselves to be.
I'm going to say I was raised in I am a Baptist and raised in the Baptist church. So I grew up, you know, the going man and a woman. That's what I've grown up with. And so I believe in Jesus and I believe in the Bible. So I just tell people, what does the Bible say? And then we could just go from there. And my part is not to judge, and but I go by the Bible. I go by what Jesus says. So when I die, I just want to go to him, and everybody may not believe in the same thing, and that's okay. But that is my take on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. William?
Yeah, and I think the further you dive into this, it becomes a real issue of philosophy and approach. You know, some churches are very good about interpreting the Bible for modern times. Some are just like, no, the world is, you know, is very young. Bible says so. It's like, yeah, but... Mm. And I think if you can get away from sort of the heaven and hell aspect, you know, good and bad, it's very binary thinking. You know, straight is good, gay, bad. Mm-hmm. Heaven, hell. Right and wrong. This kind of thing where life can't exist on a spectrum. Then you're going to keep running into these problems. You know, everyone is allowed to believe and feel whatever they want to feel, especially spiritually, without it having to impact other people or hurt other people, especially. And if it does, then what you believe is probably wrong. Mm-hmm. I don't think anywhere in the Bible, whether it's Jesus, whether it's Muhammad, you name it, Buddha, I don't think anyone's out there going, you know, well, you can seem really nice and you mean really well, but there's this one thing that's going to make me hate you. It's just not a part of really any doctrine. And if it is, then someone's teaching that doctrine wrong.
Yeah. Well, I will say I don't hate anybody gay or homosexual. Let's not go there.
We understand.
I'm pretty sure, yeah, you got cleared before you got on the show.
I do love all, but yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I grew up as well as Byron in the Baptist church, and my father's a Baptist minister, and I think one of the interesting things why he left Roanoke was because of the mentality of understanding that you should love everyone. And when he moved to Seattle and accepted a church in Seattle, I mean, that's one of the things that I learned about being understanding the openness of people and understanding the humanity in people. I mean, I remember my first example of seeing what he was telling me, that you need to love everyone. He was the grand marshal of the gay pride parade in Seattle. I mean, yeah. And he was a Baptist minister. And if you ever seen the pageantry, I should say, of a gay pride parade, you would have been like, wow. But I mean, he just said you need to respect and love everyone. And the Lord will, you know, the Lord will do the rest. So
interpreting scripture is hard.
Well, the scripture has been, I mean, people have been interpreting scripture for the longest time.
Because it's so set, because it's not as specific as people think. It's not as clear. Right. So I remember learning about, this isn't scripture, but I learned about Islam, and I learned about this rule in Islam, which is that we're talking about like rules set out by Muhammad. So this is Hadith, I think, is the technical term. But, you know, that the testimony of three women can convict a man. So, and now you may look at that and say, oh, that's so misogynistic. Oh, this is clear evidence that, you know, oh, you know, we in the U.S., you know, we don't believe any of that. Like, you know, or not in the U.S., but in the U.S. justice system, we consider a man and a woman equal, their testimony to be equal. But then I noticed that in our justice system, rape's not prosecuted. So clearly, man and woman's testimony is not equal. Yeah. You know, and that when all these stories, these Me Too stories started coming out, there was a journalist who literally was one of the main journalists on it who said, once I have three women, I go with the story. And I was like, three, really, three. I was like, wow, Muhammad was ahead of his time, wasn't he?
Well,
just be a good person.
Well, like, yeah, I think it's about
whether it's the Bible, whether it's whatever, whether it's aliens who came down and said, listen, you guys got to be good. Like, why not just be a good person?
Well, I think you can be a good person, and I think, you know, scriptures are important. But you have to be wary about scriptures as well, because it does lead up to interpretation. We have to remember that there was a time period in our history, American history, that people were having religious interpretation regarding slavery.
Yeah.
And so there's other issues regarding that. So we definitely have to be careful. Jose, you want to wrap up this conversation?
I just wanted to say, you know, that one of the big issues that I see, you know, in this segment is that learned behavior. You know, how do we change that learned behavior? We grew up living with the system of values, and going back to way of what is good and what is bad. You know, let's be good people. But then again, you know, the concept of good can be different among, you know, different people. So how do we change that learned behavior, you know, those system of beliefs that we grow up with, you know, and we come probably to a point in which we question that system of beliefs and we say to ourselves, can we really see things differently? Can we really learn? When we say about loving other people is because we learn from those people as well in order for us to become better people. No. Yeah. So then how do we change that learned behavior? How do we move away from that learned behavior that sometimes, you know, is very toxic, you know, like in the case of the police chief, you know, that's a learned behavior as well. You know, as the way he talks about that situation, I mean, it's mayor mentality. I mean, can you move away from that? Can you think differently? Can you think outside of the box? Can you put yourself to the side and really think about the feelings of that other person?
Yeah. Well, great. Thank you. Thank you all. I think we're running out of time here. So I want to thank all of you for really sitting in on our conversations today. Of course, I always ask this question for Byron and Karen. This is a question I always ask the group. What are you each watching for and looking forward to this week? And so since William is usually on my right, you can't see that, but William is usually on my right, so I'm not going to start with William. I'm going to start with Jose this time. Yeah, Jose. So what are you looking for this week? Looking forward to this week?
Well, I want to know where I continue to follow Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez because she's really making a name out of herself. Okay, so I want to follow her more. I want to know where is she heading, where is she leading, and what type of contender is she going to be in the near future. When I say near future, near future.
How old is she right now?
She's, I don't know. I want to say in her 30s, maybe 40s. Yeah.
No, she's like 30. She's okay. Too young to be president. Okay. So she's like in her early 30s, I think.
Early 30s.
Oh, and okay. The oldest.
Yeah. Byron, what are you looking forward to this week?
I'm looking forward to seeing about the Mueller report. People are saying that possibly this week something could be coming out. Mm-hmm. So that's very interesting. If it does, probably won't, but I hope so.
Yeah, I think the House Judiciary Committee just issued subpoenaed 80 people?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I think they're trying to beat the Mueller report to the punch on that one. They decided to say forget it. They're gonna just do it themselves without whatever Mueller says. But that's good. Karen, you?
Well, locally, I am definitely following the trend with the police chief. I mean, this is something that I think is really going to be detrimental to our city. So I'll be following that along. I'm looking forward to hearing his response to everything that has happened recently, and kudos to the group of people who, you know, had the nerve to go to city council and get in front of council and bring this up. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Catherine?
I'm going to make more trouble.
Good trouble.
We're going to have a GoFundMe account for your bill. William?
Well, Gathering's fun. I'm looking forward to seeing what's going on with city council, their kind of gun violence task force and community discussion that they're going to start putting together. I think that's a really great initiative, especially in light of everything that's happening.
Do you think there's sincerity in this? I'm just asking. Because usually, you know, it is near election time, and I have to be honest with you, something always important pops up during election time.
I think the people who are being pretty vocal about it aren't even up for election, so I'm excited about that.
I couldn't agree more. That gun violence task force or commission or whatever you want to call it, I think this issue is really being taken serious this time. As someone who keeps track of everything that's going in the community, I just had a local news channel contact me yesterday to talk about the 5 shootings that happened over the weekend. So it's coming to a point, you know, it's coming to a peak, and they know if something's not being done that some sort of uprising is getting ready to happen. And that's just what I'm feeling personally.
Also, thank you guys both for being here, too.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, we definitely will like for you guys to come back. Only thing I have is I was a little remiss with the, I want to say his name is Luke Perry. Is that his name? From 902.
Oh, 902.
Yeah. And the only reason why I bring that up, and people, I know people are like saying, what? But that was an era that I grew up in. And you see those things and the issues that they talked about, it was the issues that I kind of looked at it from afar as growing up and being a part of. And I didn't have $100 million. I wasn't $100 million teenager, but some of the issues really resonated with me as I was growing up. So it was kind of weird that just know that he passed away at the age of 52, mm-hmm. 52 years old. So that says a lot about we need to watch our health and so forth. I am curious about what goes on with city council. I am in the belief that they're serious about what's going on about the issue of gun violence. And I think it's about time that we start really have some focused conversations on that.
Yeah, and I think like Catherine or anyone else, you know, if you go to a city council meeting, you know, sit in, even if you don't have a position on things, go check it out, mm-hmm. see how it goes. Everybody can get their minute to voice their concerns or their opinions or whatever else. So if you like it, go support it. If you have other ideas, just check it out and hear some people out.
Yeah, and also with technology, you can actually, you know, I throw that in there, you actually can go online and also see your city council meetings. That's something that I do. I watch online as well.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yep, but the last time I went before city council, it didn't go so well. So, but that's okay. I watch via my phone.
You did great.
Well, I did good, but...
Did they put you out?
There was some victim blaming going on there.
Oh, okay, see, all right, guys. Well, we're going to save all this great energy for another time.
Yes.
Well, thank you for listening to Our Voices, Our Community, presented by Colors VA Magazine. If you like what you have heard today, leave us a review. Be sure to like Colors VA on Facebook and Colors VA Mag on Instagram and Twitter. Be one of the first to hear Our Voices, Our Community by signing up for the Colors VA newsletter. Visit our website at www.colorsvamag.com. Thank you and have a great day.